Dear Lord, what a sad little life, Jay.
Now, on FUBAR Radio, it's Pulse of the Nation.
Well, I'm being shady-ish,
I'm going to find me, Darren!
Boring!
You have to catch me first, I'm like a whippet.
Nah, it's not funny, I've got school.
Bus wankers!
And that was the fucking news.
Here's your host, Andrew White.
Hello, welcome back. Did you miss me? I've been gone for 8 weeks. Can you believe it? Yes, we've had some ill-fated scheduling conflicts and other such dramas. So we've been off the airwaves, but we are back. And what a time to be back. I've left for 8 weeks and you've managed to send even further into fascism as a country, as a world indeed. So that's been a lot of fun to write around and talk about in today's monologue and indeed the rest of the show. I've got a brilliant co-host with me. Rooney Tarwell will be joining me in just a moment, and then we'll have returning guests, maybe competing for most returning guests. I'll have to do the maths on it, but Abigail Asherman will be back in the studio talking about her new podcast. Plus, we have TV royalty. Yes, an icon of the soaps is the wonderful Cheryl Ferguson. Yes, we'll be talking to the one and only Heather Trott in just a moment. But for now, let's have a quick look at what's been going on in the news. Obviously, as we sort of, as I mentioned, descend into fascism in a roundabout sort of way. There's jokes. You have to you know, shop around yourselves. I can't sell all of them to you. But yes, obviously we have seen the Raise the Colours campaign putting up England flags all over the place. And obviously the England flag isn't inherently racist, but this is being done by questionable people with questionable motives. And I just don't think it is very respectful of the flag, if you really truly love this country, to sort of daub it on a roundabout with red paint. I mean, nothing good is daubed, is it? That is a verb exclusively for negative things, to daub a roundabout with an England flag, to daub the word nonce onto a local paedophile's garage. That's the only things you daub, you know, like that, with red paint. That's probably the two worst things you can do for the house prices of an area: roundabout, England flag, nonce on a garage. And you might find that offensive, and I also find that very offensive, that in this day and age, as a young Gen Z man, there are paedophiles out there with double door garages, and I can't even get on the housing ladder. That's actually a lie. I'm very lucky. But you know, I was trying to make a joke about paedophiles and garages. Let's set the tone. Why not? We're 2 minutes into the return on FUBAR Radio, and that's the route we're going down. It is interesting sort of seeing this, you know, move towards to reform, to right wing, and obviously not every single person of that 100,000 at the march was far right, but the point is they were being radicalised, and that is the worry. You know, Farage is sort of spouting his lies, his conspiracy theories about Turkish barbershops. What are these Turkish barbershops doing? Now, he's wrong on the Turkish barbershop front, because it is a conspiracy theory, but it's not a sort of mass replacement conspiracy theory as he sort of, you know, suggests. It's actually a conspiracy theory in cohorts with the Turkish hair replacement industry. That's all it is. The more Turkish barbers to fund the Turkish hair replacement. That's all it is. It's just plastic surgery feeding each other. It's nothing. No sort of great conspiracy other than that, Nigel Farage. But we are getting there. We know there are some concessions being made by the right and the fascists, as this headline proves. TV host admits, "I was wrong to say kill the homeless." So there you go. He's admitted that. That's a concession. He's admitted that it was wrong to say kill the homeless. We're getting somewhere. And we'll finish with this more upbeat story. I'm also commiserations to dear producer Kieran. It's nice to be back in the studio with Kieran. But obviously he has received very recently this week the heartbreaking, crushing news that Conor McGregor has pulled out of the Irish presidential race. Big fan of Conor McGee over there in the booth. And sorry, Kieran, for your loss. And our final story here is Stone Cold Cheats flung out of skimming contest. This is a stone skimming contest on the Scottish Isle of Easdale, where it's been rocked by a cheating scandal. It's been held on the Isle of Easdale for 42 years, and the rules are the rocks must come from the island. So you get there the day before, you do your scouting around for your rock skimming, and some untoward competitors have brought their own rocks and sanded down the edges themselves. In the end, the title went to Jonathan Jennings of Kentucky, who competed and beat more than 2,000 people. So there you go. That's 2% of the way to a Tommy Robinson march. That's a large number of stone skimmers. Yes, very sad about the cheating scandal, but I'm glad they resolved it amicably. I wonder whether he's done some stone skimming in his life. What a way to bring in my guest. Hello, Rooney Tarwell.
Hey, mate, how's it going? Great to be here.
Very
thank
good.
You.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you for having me. What a week to call me in.
Yeah, no. Well, this is a full, other than myself, this is a fully immigrant show. We'll have you, we'll have Abigail Asherman.
Yes. That is the way you marketed it as well.
Yes.
Fully immigrant show.
Fully immigrant show.
I love the idea, just that, with that last story, I love the idea that some news editor was like, Is there enough to fill the newspaper this week? Like, you know, there's the march, the stuff in America. Now let's get the rock skimming story.
Let's make sure that
gets its own prominent.
It's quite a large, like the Peter Mandelson, Jeffrey Epstein stuff doesn't get that much coverage, but this has got quite a chunk actually.
That's because of all the people clamoring to release the rock skipping papers. That's what we've been all clamoring for, and yes, they're finally giving us what we want.
Finally, yeah, here we are. Yeah, what a week to come in. Welcome to
Thank
the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You for joining me as I sort of get back, you know, at the desk, sort of get my bearings again. I'm glad I have such lovely company. Now, what we're going to do, this is a sort of new thing for the show, mm-hmm. is we're going to get a local news story for our guests. Now, sure. You offered me many localities.
I am from many locals.
Indeed. Correct. Auckland, New Delhi, Sydney, Acton, Plymouth, even. You got a connection to Plymouth. Now, I was very tempted by Plymouth because I'm a Southwest babe.
That's right.
But we've ended up in Australia for the legend that
That's
is.
That's exactly the journey my girlfriend went through. But anyway.
Really?
She was a Plymouth girl,
yeah.
And she somehow ended up in Australia.
No way. So you met in Australia,
yeah.
And now you're back over in...
And now I'm back, yeah. She was like, oh, you come back to the UK. The UK's great. London's great. I moved in January of 2020.
Oh, God.
So you guys can work that one out.
Yeah.
Also, for the first year and a half that COVID lockdown was happening over here, it wasn't locked down in Australia. So I basically looked like I had... chosen to move into a lockdown.
Right. So did Australia lock down later then?
Yeah, they locked down a year after the rest of the world and for not nearly as long.
Yeah.
So you actually handled it well.
Well, okay. There we go. I didn't really follow. And even though there was no news happening really because of the COVID stuff, I think I just checked out.
I think everyone checked out of the world, and that's why it was the nicest period of human history in the last 30 years. Everyone stopped kind of giving a shit, and it was all great.
Everyone just kept
everyone
to themselves.
Everyone was happy. Everyone's baking.
Yeah, a lot of baking.
So
did you
many
bake?
People baking. I baked. I played Animal Crossing. That's what I did for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Best period of my life.
You've got the calm demeanor of a man that would really smash Animal Crossing. Smash is it? I feel wrong even saying smash, but I mean really good at it.
I'm very calm when I play Animal Crossing. It's been a little bit of time. Probably haven't played it since the end of COVID, but. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend was playing it during COVID, and she's the opposite of calm while playing Animal. I've never seen someone speak so rudely to essentially an anthropomorphic fox.
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't know Animal Crossing, it's a game with just these cute little creatures that they're running little village.
They're always getting in your way. They're just you're trying to put a plant down, or you're trying to build a bridge or something, and they're just roaming around, standing there right In any sort of, if this was real life and it was a real talking fox, mm-hmm. I'd be like, excuse me, mate, do you mind? I'm actually trying to build a bridge for the good of the island. You guys aren't contributing financially. The least you can do is get out of the way.
Well, now I think I understand why your girlfriend gets annoyed.
I think I'm starting to get
you've come from Australia,
well,
where there's a lot of space for building and people are very happy to do stuff. She's from the Southwest. That is planning applications. That is council objections.
Yes.
That is town hall meetings.
British bureaucracy.
Exactly.
I
so that's triggered something in her, whereas you're I'll build this bridge eventually.
Yeah. It's just a bridge. I can use my vaulting pole or whatever it is to cross the river. This is getting very deep into Animal Crossing.
It is, yes.
I think a lot of your audience needs to understand Animal Crossing.
Let's get back to Australia.
Yes.
Which is perhaps something you said in March of 2020.
Immediately, yes.
With a man that maybe could be, benefiting from some Animal Crossing because he's a very angry, very animated man. I'm going to play you this clip. This is his most recent controversy. It is Bob Catter.
Mm.
Oh, that's my bad. Oh, that's not. Is that
I'll say that.
There we go.
Because that irritates me and I punch blokes in the mouth for saying that. Don't you dare say that. My family have been in this country for 140 years, right? So if you say anything like that, I have, on many occasions, punched blokes in the mouth, right? So I'm restraining myself today.
Well, I love the use of the word occasion there. Many occasions.
Yeah. Exactly. Birthdays, weddings.
Bar mitzvahs, funerals, anything you want. So this is Bob Catter, who's a politician in Australia, renowned for his sort of foul-mouthed rants and sort of violent outbursts. This was a reporter saying that, you have Lebanese heritage, which is true, he does, mm-hmm. and he was very offended by that. He didn't like the insinuation that he wasn't, which I don't think it was an insinuation that he wasn't of Australia, but he clearly is a bit What do you know about Bobcatter? What can you enlighten us?
Well, first and foremost, it's great to see that this is the reputation of Australia on the world stage. This is what makes it out of Australia.
Yeah.
Bobcatter is an interesting guy. So he was he's from Queensland, which is I suppose the most conservative state within Australia. Which, again, this is using an American lens over non-American country, so it's never as black and white as that.
Yeah.
But in general, Queensland tends to be the most sort of, we'll say, I wouldn't even say right wing, it just tends to be the most conservative. And Bobcatter was, so he's interesting because I could not tell you a single thing about his policy, which I think is how they operate.
Yeah, it's all why they very do smoke and mirrors. Again, if you ask anyone at this rally on Saturday, what's your favorite reform policy?
No, I couldn't tell you.
They couldn't name one.
Got one. Anyway, no. What I will tell you about Bobcatter, what anyone, if you ask in Australia, will remember Bobcatter, is one time when Bobcatter was being asked about essentially his stance on gay marriage. So the full context is this was after a not even a referendum, I guess it was a plebiscite is what they called it.
Yes, yeah.
On gay marriage, where they basically ask all of Australia to vote on gay marriage because, you know, that makes sense to vote for a
gay
marriage.
Yeah, let's see if
exactly.
Do we fancy, you know, giving human rights?
Exactly. But they asked him about it, and he gave a very surprisingly progressive answer.
Well, I have the clip.
Do you know what? I'm going to let this clip speak for itself.
Yep, here is Bobcatter on same-sex marriage.
I mean, you know, people are entitled to their sexual proclivities, you know. I mean, let there be 1,000 blossoms bloom, as far as I'm concerned. You know, but I ain't spending any time on it, because in the meantime, every 3 months, a person is torn to pieces by a crocodile in North Queensland.
Do you know, it's so strange, the switch up, obviously, in topic and in tone. When he's talking about gay marriage, he sounds like he's on his deathbed. He's like, everyone's entitled to their sexual proclivities.
Yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah,
as
yeah.
soon as he's got that energy to really get into the crocodile,
do you know what it
issue.
Is? In the beginning of it, when you rewatch it back knowing what's coming after, you can tell that he's angry about the crocodile thing from the beginning. Like, that's what he actually wants to talk about. It's a bit performed. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, I don't care. But what I really want to talk about is these goddamn crocodiles killing one person every 3 months.
Yeah, for a year. Doesn't seem that crazy.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the kind of man Bobcatter is, all right?
Yeah.
He cares about his constituents down to the individual member.
Yeah. Maybe he should have married his answer together. It's just like, well, gay couples can't get married if one of them is torn apart by a crocodile.
Can you imagine? 4 gay couples every year don't get to get married in Australia purely because of the crocodile problem.
There we go. That's how you get the Liberals to care.
Honestly, it's one of those things where you almost like, you kind of just accept that. All right, yeah, an elected official just said that.
Mm.
And it just said, like, and we're all just like, ha-ha, Bob, isn't he funny?
Yeah.
And you're just like,
so he must have been in for ages. He's a very sort of weathered man, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Bobcatter's been around for a long time. I mean, I've been in the UK for about 6 years, and I was in Australia for, like, 10 years before that. And he was a mainstay the entire time. I think he's one of those ones where there was a brief period, I remember, that he kind of angled to be the Donald Trump of Australia, and then I think even the man who really cares about 4 crocodile deaths a year, even he was like, that's a bit much, I reckon. I think I should tone this down. I don't know if people are gonna like this. And so he sort of worked away from it. But don't quote me on this. I'm not a Bobcatter expert.
No, that's why we've booked you, Rooney. We're going to have to...
Sorry, I got to update my resume. I got to stop putting that at
front. Yeah, that was top of your website. That's very... it's interesting because we mentioned Trump, because this is obviously like an iconic Bobcatter, like a soundbite.
Yeah.
It does feel like the sort of thing that would just get lost in a Trump speech. Like, he'd be doing a 3-hour ramble, and that's just something he'd say.
He did a whole debate where he said that there's a town eating cats and dogs. We just don't talk about
that's
anymore
a good point,
as a
actually.
Society.
He says so
that
much
just doesn't come
shit,
up
that,
anymore.
Yeah.
Even the people who like support him afterwards were like, yeah, that was a bit stupid. It's just like, yeah, but fine, okay, I guess. We're fine then,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I think it's very clever. Because at a certain point, right, you get associated with something, right? So it's that old like joke of like, it's a very dumb joke, but it's that old joke of like, you know, you build, you live a big life, you build all these like houses, you know help people, you be a member of your community, but you fuck one goat.
Yeah, and then you're a goat fucker.
Right? Also very correct, you know.
Yeah.
And the point of me saying this isn't to say I think we should be kinder to goat fuckers. I don't want to say that. I want that to be on the record.
It's that Bobcatter fucks goats. That's what we want on the record.
It's that if he does, you know, like he says, like, let a thousand blossoms bloom.
Indeed,
as long as he's not fucking a crocodile.
Yeah, real sort of strange human-crocodile relations with Bobcatter. Do you know what? He's so... I made this mistake with producer Conan. I was like, oh, why didn't you have this soundbite? Turns out it's not Bobcatter. Do you know the man I'm thinking of? That did the dog, the rabid dog on Australian TV. Have you seen this clip?
I don't think this man is talking
about this like dog attack, and it's the cadence. He even looks a little bit like Bobcatter. He's like, you know, and then you're from New Zealand, so it's fine to do the Australian accent. you know, this dog's coming at me. I don't know how that translates onto the radio.
I think I have seen this clip.
And I thought because it's the same energy, I thought that guy was Bobcatter, but it turns out it's not.
No, you know, you could do an entire radio show just on discussing Australian TV show clips or like news clips.
What's the crime? Having a succulent Chinese meal.
That's a very famous one. That guy passed away last year, actually.
He did,
very day for the internet.
Yeah. Well, so obviously, you've got ties to all these places.
Yes.
New Zealand, a much more popular international politician, Jacinda Ardern. Just on icons, and maybe what you feel in your heart, who would you like to, like, you know, fly the flag for? Are you like, I want to be in the Australian camp and have, you know, succulent Chinese meal man? I want to be in the Plymouth camp and have, I don't know anyone famous from Plymouth, actually.
I think the only famous person from Plymouth is Tom Daley.
Well, there you go. Who are you? You've got so many sort of icons to pick from related to where you've been in your life.
Yeah. So is this someone I'm trying to emulate, or just that I'm like a big champion?
Who's your number one icon that you feel geographically connected to?
Okay, do they have to be a real person?
No, I'm interested to see where this is going.
No. I was just going to say, genuinely, my icon is Samwise Gamgee from Lord of the Rings, which I only made that connection because of New Zealand.
There we go.
That's part of the connection. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, New Zealand has lovely people, and I would say pound for pound, better politicians than the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But I would never answer a politician anyway.
So it's Samwise, there you go.
Samwise Gamgee,
a wonderful hobbit.
And that's topical because Sean Astin was just nominated the SAG-AFTRA president.
Well, there you go. Look at that. Pulse of the nation. Yeah. Thank you for bringing
pulse
me back
to... Pulse of a different nation, but still a pulse of a nation.
Pulse of a nation.
That's what's important, right?
Which does sound a little bit like sort of a translated title of some sort of like Nazi, you know, documentary. The Pulse of a Nation. It's like the rise of... anyway.
You know where we get too much American news when I know the president of SAG-AFTRA, but I don't know anything about BAFTA. I don't know who... Does it have a president structure?
Well, we're going to Google that in the break, and we're going to tell you who the BAFTA president is, and we'll also be talking to
and what movie were they in?
Cheryl Ferguson, who I don't think has won a BAFTA, but again, we'll do all this research in the break. See you in 3 minutes.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer Levy.
We store so much of our trauma and our energy in our body. I am just incredibly, incredibly tired of keeping this trauma locked inside my body. And so all I needed to do is release it. You know, it's like going on a bender and drinking too much booze and you throw it up because you just need to get that out of your system because it's gonna catch up with you at some point if you don't.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Hello!
Is the sound of your mates.
alive. He's getting to more gigs this year, and the next. It's the sound of saying, I got you, mate. It's the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. It's the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, yeah, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness, and I need him to be kind.
Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Pulse of the Nation. I've got the title of my own show wrong there. In the break, we found out that the president of BAFTA is Prince of Wales, William, and are on the line now. Sadly, a great injustice, not a BAFTA winner, but they have won Indie Soap Awards Funniest Performance, and they are a legend, an icon, and now an author as well. It's the wonderful Cheryl Ferguson. Hello.
Hello, you two. How are you all?
Very good, thank you.
It's all getting a bit like heated in there, isn't it, sometimes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is my co-host, Rooney.
Hi, Rooney.
And I'm Andrew, and we will be getting into, well, so much of your career, of your life. You've done so much stuff, Cheryl. And most importantly, right now, you've got a brilliant book out, Behind the Scenes, Your Life Beyond EastEnders. How has that been? What's the reception been like since publishing?
I'll tell you what, to be quite honest with you, I'm blown away with it. I'm absolutely blown away. The response has been amazing. People have been stopping me in the street who have bought it and said, oh, I bought your book. Well, actually, they say, I bought your book, because I live up north now, you see. It's not a southern accent up here.
Yeah.
But they bought the book. People have been online and they've made videos. Well-known people, faces have done the same, got the book and read it. And I'm not seriously blown away. But then I was blown away when Steve McFadden, who obviously won his well and truly brilliant NTA the other day, he wrote a foreword in it. He is like my big brother in real life. You know, I see him often when I'm in London. And he wrote a foreword in it along with David Walliams in the book. And it chokes me up every time I read it, to be quite honest with you, because you don't get to hear many people talk about you, or they don't write about you, and so it was absolutely a joy to read. And Steve doesn't say things lightly. He's not like that at all. You know, he keeps his cards close to his chest. So I'm just, the response has been amazing. I want people to read it, because there are so many things in there that I'm sure will touch other people's lives, things they can relate to. You know, there's funny stories. There's obviously stories about EastEnders. There's stories about the Queen in it. There's stories about Queen. There's stories about, you know, meeting George Michael. There's stories about being friends with George Michael. There's stories about Barbara Windsor, Jean Brown, lots and lots of people who are now no longer with us anymore. That is always in my heart, to be quite honest with you. So it was a joy to be able to write about those people as well. But, you know, there's been some real ups and downs in my life. It started in an odd way. And we joke in the family that, you know, I started off as an appendicitis, because my mum hid me. She hid me, you know, she hid her pregnancy. So everybody thought she was going in for an appendicitis, and it wasn't. Out popped me. So there we go. You know, it started from the beginning. It was quite an amazing story. And you know, if you wrote a soap story around my life, you'd have to put all the soaps together to be able to.
Well, that has been, I've seen obviously so much, as you say, David Walliams, Julian Clary, lots of people have been saying lovely stuff about this book. I'm very excited to read it. I'm going to wait for the 6th of November. I'm going to get you reading it yourself when the audio book comes out.
Good luck to you, because this War and Peace, mate, it goes on for about 9 hours.
Well, it'll be nine hours well spent.
It's well worth it. It was a real triumph to go in the studio and actually, I've never narrated out. I mean, I'm not even a voiceover person. You know, I don't do voiceovers, and I actually surprised myself, to be quite honest with them, being able to bring the book alive and trying to attempt to do Barbara Windsor's voice, trying to attempt to sort of do Steve McFadden's voice, you know, all of these sort of things in there. But it was really hard work to do, but I was buzzing at the end of the week when I'd done it. It was again another achievement, and I can't believe, you know, I turned 60 the other week, and I just thought, gosh, you know, keep going, Sherry. There's lots of things you want to do still, you know. It's amazing.
I wanted to ask about your writing process on the book, because like you said, it's such a, you know, to be able to combine your stories from, so you know, from your whole life. Did you find it challenging, rewarding? Just how did you find the process of just getting words onto paper? Were you pretty good with it? I know I'm the most inconsistent writer. I will write in verse, and then I won't write for ages. Just what I think, see.
I
how
think
you
what
went.
It was. It took. I mean, I was on tour with I was on tour for 4 years, for 6 months at a time, with a thing called Menopause and Musical. Now, don't ask, because only so many years you can be menopausal. I've stopped doing it now, you know. So you know, it's like that's enough now. But I was on tour with various of the Nolans. They were on with me, but I was on tour with Maureen, and we do nothing on the bus, but you know, talk about our lives. And she said, "My gosh, Cheryl, you got a story. Why don't you write it?" And this was about three and a half years ago, and I just thought, well, she could be right, but how do you go about these things? Because, I mean, you know, I still kind of write songs. My son writes poetry and books. He's a great writer and actor. So I kind of thought, well, I know how to put words together, but actually the best way I can do it is because I can talk for the UK. So just talking to my phone, and doesn't matter which way it goes, higgledy-piggledy, and then I literally asked the publisher if they were interested, and then I worked with another person who was able, I mean, it was all my words, but they were able to kind of just put them in a way that was like in an order. And it's not chronological. Mm. It doesn't go in a chronological order. It flips from here, there, and everywhere. And I like that kind of thing, because life's like that. Life doesn't just go, you just can't kind of trot along. You think about things that you did before, and then you go and do those things. So I think the process was really, you know, it was literally speaking into my phone and getting every single bit of memory. And there could have been a lot more, but, you know, there's only so many pages people can read, really.
Well, indeed, you have had quite a life. I've all sorts of stuff. There's love, there's heartbreak, there's health scares, financial crises. Obviously, you had so much, and particularly in the last few years, you've been through quite a lot as well. When you were going through all this, did you have a good support network? Did you know? Any, obviously, you mentioned Steve McFadden there. Did any sort of old EastEnders castmates come? Were they there for you? Could you lean on them?
Yeah, I mean, I left EastEnders, and a series of events happened. I went into the Big Brother house, and that was fantastic. And I just married my second husband, and he's Moroccan, and we planned this kind of amazing life where we were going to go and, you know, I could pay my mortgage off here, and we were going to go and build a house out in Morocco and live there as well part of the years. We had an amazing plan, a lot of stuff happened when I came out of the house. It was pretty horrendous. You know, not to sort of spoil the book, but I mean, I think it's common knowledge. I was conned out of a lot of money by an accountant. Unfortunately, it happened when I was, you know, come out of the Big Brother house and had this amazing check that I'd put into the bank, and then it kind of had to come out again and be paid to the tax man. And it was just absolutely horrendous. But I then got cancer just not long. And I think a lot of it was the stress and everything else that was going on. But I'm a great believer that what is going on in the outside of you happens to the inside of you as well. So, you store stuff and things can happen. Now, I don't know if, you know, that's the truth or not, but I believe that, you know, you can just calm yourself down a little bit, to be quite honest with you. But at that time, it was literally like being on a hamster wheel and you couldn't get off.
Yeah.
And I literally, I got cancer and I couldn't afford my mortgage. People like Barbara Windsor and Linda Henry, who played Shirley, they all literally helped out. I mean, I went to Barbara's house.
Yeah.
And I told her about it, and I was only about a week away from having surgery. And she said, go on, Scott, go, you know what you got to do. And Scott came in and she literally wrote a check out for my mortgage and for bills for me. Wow. For like the next couple of months, 3 months or something. And it was just like, the most unexpected help, because I didn't have enough money to, at that particular point, to pay my mortgage. I had to sell my house. I had to do loads of stuff. And, the book explains it all, really, what actually happened. But the generosity that you don't know of these people, you only learn about their generosity, unfortunately, sometimes when they've passed away. Same as George Michael. You didn't know his generosity as a person until he passed away, when you realize he was giving money here, there and everywhere to people to have IVF treatments, to all the charities that he belonged to, and he was anonymous about them. So I think the thing is, it's, for me, the support network is not necessarily always your family. And I'm aware of that as well in my life, that your friends become your family and they stick by you through thick and thin. And they're always there when you're at your lowest and you're at the rock bottom and you're going to a food bank. Those people are there. And then at the same time, they're there when they're clapping you and praising you when you're like walking down a red carpet and you've got a little award in your hand. I mean, those are the types of people you need around you all the time, that's going to be there through thick and thin.
Yeah.
And the rest is kind of like, it's a like baggage, really. You don't need a lot of the rubbish that people give. So, I feel like they, go and find somebody else who's going to help you with your problems, and you be kind, because there's two words I say in life, and three things, but the two words I go by is communicate and educate. And communicate, you talk to people and you listen. Mm-hmm. Educate, you teach and you're taught. That's the two words. And then we're called humankind. That's what we're called. Yeah. So why can't we be kind humans? It's not rocket science to be that, is it, really?
Yeah.
So be a human kind, be a kind human, and, just have respect for people. And you don't have to always believe what they believe or to think what they think or have their politics or their whatever it is. But at the same time, it's about respecting people and knowing sort of boundaries and limits and educating yourself.
Yeah.
And communicating. That's what it is.
A brilliant message. And I'm very glad you had kind humans around you at some of those low moments. Now, look, I got one more final question. First of all, I want to replug your wonderful book, Behind the Scenes, available at all good retailers. The audiobook comes out on the 6th of November as well, so you can listen to Cheryl reading it herself. Now, you are an icon in many, many circles, especially lots of Pride events. I know you're always booked and busy in the summer. You do singing engagements. My question is on that, because I rediscovered you on my TikTok singing songs. I know you did stuff with the Groove Chorus. So it's a two-parter. What is your favourite song to sing? What really gets you in the mood? And secondly, just because it's been mentioned a few times online, would you ever duet with Sean Williamson?
I love Sean, and Sean's got his own thing, and he's a brilliant singer. I've seen him live as well. So, never say never, say never.
Yeah.
But you see, my collaboration, I've got a little bit of a bucket list, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And I would quite like to do a collaboration, either a cover or one of his own, with Lewis Capaldi.
Ooh. Oh, that's a good pairing.
That would be my go-to. If anybody could, not, you know, not, I say knock on my door. That's a really old fashioned thing. If anybody calls, call my, would anybody drop knocked on my door? I'd go, bugger off. No, I wouldn't. If anybody knocked on my door or rang the phone to my agent and they said they were something to do with Lewis Capaldi, and I wouldn't even just, you know, they couldn't even finish the sentence. They go, Lewis, and I go, Capaldi, and before they could say, no, it's doing Lewis Carroll at Christmas. I'd be very upset. So Lewis Capaldi is my go-to to do a collaboration with. As far as a song goes, gosh, it depends on your moods. I mean, I can literally be not very well, actually, I have to say this. I can literally be going around the house singing Janet Kay, for example, but she's a bit high, to be quite honest. So I leave that to my son, because he's got an amazing high voice. But I love, you know, I love sort of any genre of music. I love Motown. I quite like singing Love Train at the moment, because I think it's an absolute belter that needs to come back and needs to be done. And I think, you know, even if it's like, I don't know, one of these charity singles, whatever it is, it needs to basically pull the world a bit together, and we all need to join that love train, and we all need to just, I'd be happy to be that one that's not very, you know, well known, but I'll sing on it, you know, a bit like Live Aid, you know, I'll be the one in the background who's sort of hiding their head. I'd be quite happy to do that if anybody fancies a collaboration on that as well.
There you go. A beautiful message to end on. Be kind. Be kind, humans. Sing love. Make sure you get Cheryl's book behind
Lewis,
the scenes.
If you're listening, you know what to do.
Yeah, that's the most important call to action. Lewis Capaldi, or anyone who has the contacts, Cheryl Ferguson is waiting for the call. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, love. Bye.
The wonderful Cheryl Ferguson there. We are going to head into a quick break, and then we'll be back with Abigail Shaman. See you in a bit.
Food Bar Radio.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love them, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know, you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
So we've got Dr. Matt Morgan. Someone's heart stopped beating for 8 hours.
So he was stuck on a ledge in a freezing snowstorm, and his heart stopped for an amazing 9 hours. He's still the world's longest surviving cardiac arrest patient. And he lived because he was cold. You know, there's a saying, you're not dead until you're warm and dead.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and yeah, being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome. Oh my goodness, that was quite grandiose, wasn't it? Hello and welcome back to Pulse of the Nation. That was Cheryl Ferguson. What an icon to have the Heather Trott down the line. Do go check out our book, Behind the Scenes. Now, behind the scenes here, we had the wonderful Abigail come into the studio. Hello, Abigail.
Hello, good to see you again.
How are you? I was saying, you think you might be our most... returning guest.
There is a huge advantage to living down the street.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say we booked this week's in advance. I might have gotten a message that I'm around when there's a dropout, and Andrew knows that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I'm very glad to have you. And behind the scenes, turns out you might have the connection to Lewis Capaldi because he's seen you do stand up.
Yeah. So Lewis was in a the audience of a show that I closed, and it was at the Westin Comedy Club, which is no longer around anymore. And it was a room above a pub, so maybe 40 to 50 audience members were in there. So everyone knew
that
Lewis was in
the
room. And when the show ended, he was as far away from the exit as one could be, right? So when the show ended, everyone stood up and just kind of like pretended to look at their phone to have him walk by to get pictures. And I walked over to him and was like, hey, thanks for coming and thanks for being so cool about it. Because like everyone knew he was there.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, no, it's great. I loved it. Great show. You want to have a drink? And I sat and had a couple beers with Lewis and his date. And then afterwards, he was like, we're going to go to another bar. Do you want to come? And I was like, I think you should go on your date. I think I have to go now.
I think he was on his date.
Yeah. Oh, no. I could have slipped in there.
No, that's very funny, though. Because he's also quite conspicuous, isn't he? He's like a tall guy.
Mm. Yeah.
Like he's... It's hard for him to blend in anyway.
Yeah. Is there a celeb that's been in your audiences?
In my gigs.
Yeah, yeah.
No, just other comedians.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Good,
great comedians, but I wouldn't.
No.
I would never call them celebs to their faces.
What about you? Because I have two others.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have other celeb stories, like of meeting celebs, but
they're not being
in your audience.
And not my own audience. No.
I had the old posh couple from Gogglebox. They were, they sort of owned,
all right,
owned
that's the
pub.
Level of celebrity that I've got celebrities.
Yeah,
well,
I was like, right, yeah, sure. I've got real celebrities over here.
Okay. Yeah, my uncle came to the show once. Yeah, no, he's pretty famous in the part of Plymouth, you know what I mean?
The posh old couple from Gogglebox, Steph and, I don't know who they are.
I've never seen Gogglebox. So.
Giles, not Giles, not that one. Oh, goodness, I'll find out their
name.
You
don't even know what celebrities were in your show.
Okay, I'll climb down.
Real quick, just to brag. Now, these two I did not meet after the show, but Darren Brown.
Oh, wow.
And Neil Patrick Harris.
That's huge.
I have met Neil Patrick Harris, but not in the audience.
You've met him?
Not in the audience of my show.
See, he was at my show, and I actually went out to find him. I was like, I have to meet him, but he had already left by the time I
don't know if I can legally say this, but I met him in a bathroom at Edinburgh.
Very late. I have a friend who has also gone out drinking with Neil.
It was during
Edinburgh.
The festival. He was at the festival.
Yeah.
It was a very late night, and... In the bathroom at Assembly, near Assembly Bar.
Interesting.
Were you drinking in the bar at his... Wait,
no,
you
no.
met him in the bathroom?
We ran into each other in the bathroom.
Okay.
I met him in the bathroom.
I peed next
to Neil Patrick Harris. That's the story.
That's
pretty
great.
That's
pretty great.
We gave each other, like, nods as we were leaving.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you nodded like, I know who you are, and he nodded like, you know who I am.
Exactly. No, he was definitely nodding like, oh, you seem like an interesting comedian that I'm going to try and follow their career and their trajectory. That's what his nod I felt like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my nod was definitely, wow, you're Neil Patrick Harris. I peed next to you.
I mean, the same year, he might have been coming to see you and then peeing with Rooney.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, Steph and Dom, I found the Goggle Books people. whilst you were
these are just
trading
names,
Neil Patrick Harris blows, I found the names. Steph and Dom, they were in the audience.
If you told me that there were three guys on Goggle Books called Neil Patrick and Harris, I'd be like, yeah.
Just a real quick tech-end issue. I don't know if I'm supposed to hear anything out of these yet, but I can't hear anything out of
it. I can't hear anything out of this one, but I'm assuming it's because you're not playing anything.
Well, you should be able to hear my voice, though, through
the
headphones.
No, I can hear nothing.
Oh, okay. I wonder whether we can get producer Kieran in to see if we can, because we're about to do an audio quiz that we do.
I can hear other things through it, but you're just voice.
Am I supposed to?
Yeah, no, I can't hear it.
You
can
hear it. Okay, Rudy can
hear
it.
I can hear it.
Oh, is there an on button?
Behind the scenes, once again.
Yeah, there we go. Okay,
you hear me now?
Is that better?
There we go.
Thank you, Kieran. Thank you for flagging that abaglar, because that would have been really awkward if we got to the quiz and you couldn't hear anything.
Yeah.
Now, look, I'm keen to move on because, quite frankly, you've put me to shame with your A-list encounters. That is very, very impressive. I won't make you tell your Beyonce story again, but abaglar has had a lot of brushes with fame, and she has got a brand new podcast.
Yes, I do.
It is All British Comedy Explained. You can follow the podcast at British Comedy Pod. You're doing it with wonderful Tom Selinski.
Yes.
And so you are an American and you've come to the UK and you are constantly shamed by the comedy industry, by comedians, for not knowing sitcoms.
Yeah, for someone who desperately wants to be on British television and do comedy on British television, I've seen almost none of it. So Tom, my podcast partner, who is just an encyclopedia of all things comedy and entertainment, has taken me under his wing. And each week we will go through a comedy television show, like a sitcom or a sketch show, and we will watch two episodes. He will explain the history to me, and then we watch the episodes, and then we discuss them. So the podcast actually launches October 2nd, but you can already subscribe to it now on any podcatcher, and we have a YouTube. But we've already recorded the first one, and it was Monty Python's Flying Circus.
You never seen Monty Python?
Really?
I've seen The Holy Grail.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
I've seen Life of Brian, but I've never seen Flying Circus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And afterwards, I think Tom was... I shouldn't give away the episode. He might be a little annoyed with me because the entire time we watched Season 3, Episode 10... And there was a background actor, and I was like, that's Tom Waits. And Tom was like, that's not Tom Waits. And I was like, I promise you, that's Tom Waits.
Yeah.
And so when we got back, and he was like, what did you think of the show? And I was like, I can't believe they got Tom Waits as a background actor. And he was like, it wasn't Tom Waits. But I swear, guys.
Have you Googled him?
Foo Bar,
like 1963 or something?
I have, and no one has, like, the internet hasn't confirmed, but I did a quick Google.
It hasn't denied it either.
It hasn't denied it either. And so I do have some stills. I'm going to make a little video. I'm going to reach out to John Cleese and the rest and be like, that was Tom Waits, wasn't it? It does make sense that he's the kind of guy who would just show up like that. I swear to God. It's the sketch where, for those of you listening at home, it's the sketch where they're talking about dirty books.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy in the background in a hat who just kind of like is there and then walks out. And I will die on this hill. It's Tom Waits.
How old is Tom Waits?
He's dead. But at the time, he would have been like 30, because that's a Tom Selinski, my podcast partner, was like, he would have been too young. And I'm like, no.
He would have been in his 20s.
He would have been in his
20s. Oh, then maybe? 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was him. I swear.
Okay, well, there you go. That's episode one, and there's already a great mystery.
Yeah.
So there's much more to tune into. And some of these shows, I am surprised not to buy into everyone else also bullying you. But Victoria Wood, The Day to Day, Goon Show, Young Ones, even The Office, The British Office.
I've never seen The British Office. So the first season, Tom curates everything, and I just show up and be a dummy. So we've cast ourselves well. And the first season is 8 episodes of our podcast, and it's called Landmarks, which is what Tom thinks I have to watch in order to understand British comedy. These are the most important ones. So if listeners disagree, please write in. But we will be doing Monty Python's Flying Circus, The Young Ones, not only, but also The Goon Show, which to me sounds like it's going to be racist. Victoria.
I reckon most of those might
be racist. Victoria Wood, as seen on TV, The Office, The Day Today, and I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue. Those are the first. That's
eight. These are quite foundational, though.
Have you? Because
I've seen a few of them. I've not seen all of them.
Is there anything that people really grill you for not having seen?
Not grill me necessarily. My like Vicar of Dibley, I got used to get a lot before I watched it because my girlfriend was like, "Have you not seen Vicar of Dibley?" I'm like, "I'm not from the UK."
Of course, she's from Plymouth as well.
She's from Plymouth, exactly.
Vicar of Dibley.
But also because it's like, I think hers was more like, it's Dawn French and Jennifer Saunders. Like, they're like royalty. You have to watch everything that they're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So after that's when I watched like Ab Fab and all those. So, that was probably the only one. I think now there's nothing that's like, I guess Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Yeah, I've seen clips of it. I was paid by Channel 5 to watch clips of comedies and then comment on them. So I've seen Mrs. Brown's Boys.
I love how
Boys
on the
that.
Record you said, I have seen clips, but I just want to get on the record that
paid.
I was paid
to see them. But The Vicar of Dibley, my other podcast, Neurodivergent Moments, co-hosted with Joe Wells, he always gives me hell for not having seen comedies, and The Vicar of Dibley's come up and he's like, how could you have not seen
you would love it
that?
I think
I find it interesting when people have like, well, I've seen these things, therefore this is what everyone's experience must be.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I could be like,
Joe is very like that.
But there are times where I'm like, I've caught myself doing the same thing where, we had this interesting thing. Have you guys seen a show called Pingu?
No.
Yes.
You've seen Pingu. Yes. It's a children's...
it's a little, like, claymation penguin.
Animated thing.
Okay. Yeah. I think I've seen...
This
is on the socials, right?
It was a TV show from, like, when we were kids. Mm-hmm. I found out that the Pingu theme tune is different in Australia and New Zealand than it is in the UK.
Interesting.
So when I was singing the Pingu theme tune, because I was, I don't know, high or something, my girlfriend was looking at me like, what are you singing? I'm like, it's the Pingu tune. And then she was like, that's not the Pingu tune. And then she looked it up, and the first video was my tune. And then she had a moment where she was like, you know, the whole Berenstain Bears stuff, when she's like, am I in an alternate universe? And then the next video was the UK tune. It turns out it was a different
tune. Pingu tunes.
Yeah.
There we go. What a weird set of circumstances for that to have even occurred.
Can you guys do Pingu on your podcast?
Tom has some rules. No movies, no game shows, and he's already breaking one rule apparently in our first season. No cartoons.
No cartoons. So what rules he break it?
Apparently the last one's sort of a game show.
Sorry, I haven't a clue.
Yes.
Yes.
So, go check out All British Comedy Explained. That is at British Comedy Pod and at Abogolaya, Abigolaiah.
Well done.
Thank you very much. I had it written down to be fair. Before we head... this always happens. The show end of the show rolls around so quickly. But I do want to get this headline in because this got sent to us and I'm very fascinated. Aldi launches limited edition gender reveal Cuthbert cakes. Now, we are no stranger to Cuthbert Colin the Caterpillar chat here on Pulse the Nation. You're both familiar with the famous caterpillar cakes.
Oh, yes.
It's a cake that looks like a caterpillar, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Bingo. Aldi have got a gender reveal version to celebrate most babies being born in September, featuring either blue or pink icing. Now, what do we make of this iteration particularly of gender reveals and also just generally gender reveals as a whole? Yes,
so really. I have some mechanical questions first.
Okay.
About the situation. I'm guessing it's inside the cake, right? Like it still looks like the normal caterpillar cake, because otherwise it defeats the purpose of the reveal if it's like a blue cake.
my question is also, does the box say gender reveal cake boy on it? Very hard.
Yeah, that's good. So, yes, they've got pink and blue chocolate beans, and then the inside is buttercream that is either pink or blue.
But there's
blue.
Pink and chocolate on the outside of the cake.
There you go. Here it is. So the you see the little chocolate beans are pink and...
Oh, they're pink and blue. Okay.
And then the inside so be,
is there a yellow as well?
I think that's the traditional Cuthbert.
Gotcha.
The Cuthbert as God intended, if you will. And then, the gender reveal has different buttercream in the middle. Have you ever been to a gender reveal, either of you?
No,
I've never not.
Would you go if invited?
Depends on how remote the location is.
That sounds like you can get murdered.
Well, no, it's just I've for some reason in my head, I've really come to associate gender reveals with forest fires.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, when they set off
there seems to be a sense of like, oh, we throw a lot of powder up and that powder catches fire because we had fireworks or something. And then all of a sudden, like, a local...
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Here's the Cuthbert.
Okay.
The cross-section of Cuthbert with either blue or pink. I
feel like it's mainly cake still, isn't it? It's not that much.
It is mostly cake, but that's good. I would like cake.
I prefer more cake.
I just think if you're going to do a gender reveal, if you're going to do all that palaver, don't do it cheaply like this.
Yeah. If you are going to do it,
save up for
set the state of Colorado on fire.
Exactly, like that's what we're saying.
That's what someone did. They fired
the color
a cannon
of the flames, right?
And they set the state of Colorado on fire. I would go to one, mostly because there's likely to be free booze and cake. I know everyone's like, ugh, there's a gender reveal. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, all parties, when you really think about them, are stupid.
Yes.
You know what
100%.
I mean? Like, it's an occasion to get together.
Yeah.
If it's I know sometimes there are videos online where the dad looks devastated when it's like blue, yeah, or excuse me, pink. Yeah.
So sorry, I'm going to look devastated now. And
it's
sorry
time to go.
Yeah, it's time to go. Also, what a sexist moment for me to interrupt a woman talking about sexism. But there we go. That is the end of the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Foo Bar Radio.